Well, before we get started, we're going to be talking a little bit about our kids. And I know you all have, most of you have kids, I think all. These are our babies. This was Dave and Alicia when they were just real little, and then individual pictures. And they were happy kids. We loved them. And of course, they're the cutest babies ever.
There you go.
Dave just turned 50.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep.
So.
Yep.
Back in 1859. Charles Dickens wrote a novel, Tale of Two Cities. I'm sure most of you have heard about that and know about that. The quote in the first line of the book, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. In some ways, this explains the first part of our marriage, the first half of our marriage, actually. Our child-rearing years. And you'll have a good understanding of why as we talk about this. But in any case, we have many good memories of our those years. Our kids were the best of times. We really enjoyed having kids and raising kids. We had many good times and many good memories of those times. We had two great kids, David and Alicia. They're Christians. And they're doing the right things in their lives, but they were also born many years apart. So it was kind of like we raised two times. we went through things twice, not together. So that was kind of unique in a way. But
well, David was born first, and like I said, he was the cutest, sweetest little baby ever. But one day,
I'm sure some in here will disagree with that. But
yeah, but one day, as I was watching Dave play, God impressed it upon my heart that I was not just responsible for his physical upbringing and welfare, but also for his spiritual welfare. I had been raised, as I said before, in a Christian home, and I knew this. But the Lord really impressed it upon me that day. And if you remember that, I said, I guess last week, that Joe and I had both gotten saved younger, but we had strayed away from the Lord. And by the time we were married, neither of us were going to church. So I realized at this point I needed to get back to God and back to church. And then when Dave was about 4, we decided we wanted to have another child. But for some reason, I couldn't get pregnant. And years went by. And then one day, as I was reading my Bible, I came across this verse, Psalm 37:4. Delight thyself also in the Lord, and he shall give thee the desires of thine heart. Well, I clung to that verse, and I started spending more time with God in his word and praying and trying to please him by my life. And it wasn't long after that I became pregnant with Alicia. God had given me the desire of my heart and blessed us with the second cutest, sweetest little baby ever.
And that was, they were 8 years apart. So it was definitely like raising two different families. And I didn't mind that Sue was going to church. In fact, I supported her. But for some reason, my heart just wasn't in it. And I was just far away from God at that point in time in my life. We spent... And then when the kids became of school age, I supported sending them to Christian school. We came up with the money to do that, so they both went through Christian school the whole way and all that. But our lives evolved around the kids. It was just as simple as that. We were always playing with them, taking them to parks, to amusement parks, playing games with them. Taking them swimming, Our vacations were always focused around the kids. When they got old enough to start playing sports, that's when things really began to move in our lives. David was first. We signed him up for Little League Baseball, and then the hustle and bustle began. The running here, the running there, and it didn't stop until Alicia was out of high school. It seemed like we never had a breather from running. I helped coach Dave's baseball team for a while. Dave played football, baseball, bowling scouts, just to name a few things. He also went, he also played baseball through high school. So, we never missed any of his games. We just went to all of his games and all of his events. Alicia and the second wave came. I was teaching school at the time. Well, this was just a great time. This was a great time because I was off all summer long, and we would pick strawberries, go to a park, go to amusement parks. We played baseball. We swam. We just did numerous things together. We did all kinds of things together. She also played softball and basketball all through high school, and we never missed any of her events and any of her games.
Another thing that we did with the kids was camping. We camped a lot. In fact, we started when Dave was about 6 months old. I remember that first time we took his little, I don't know if they still call them playpens, but he had a little playpen. We took that along and sat it in the middle of the tent, and that's just what we did, and we continued that, and of course Alicia came along and continued to tent. And in fact, after the kids were both grown up, married, and had kids of their own, we all three generations, we still camp together, and we love it. In fact, just the other week, Alicia said Mackenzie was asking if we can go camping again this summer. So we have to make some plans to do that. But just so neat doing stuff like that together.
Years ago, when we were finally able to afford a boat, I bought a boat. We spent many hours on the river, many hours on the lakes fishing. We did a lot of fishing and sometimes just boating. I got a little story to tell you about what happened one day up at Goldsboro. Now, it's not a fish this big. Okay, it has nothing to do with the fish. In fact, I was the fish. My son was about 12 years old. He's in the back of the boat. He cast, and when he did, the lure caught me right here in my head. It was right at my temple. And I mean, it smacked me. We ended up, I had to cut the line off of the lure. We got the boat to the land. We got the boat out of the water. Trailed it into the hospital. I walk in the hospital. Here I am walking in with a bass lure on my, hanging off the top of my head. Well, I've always taken credit, and this is not a good credit, but I've always taken credit for, I started the piercing craze. But they cut the lure out of me, and anyhow, everything was all right. But it was real close to my eye. You know, it was a pretty serious thing. In any case, even after the kids were both married, as Sue said, we still boat and fish and did all that kind of stuff. And our son just recently said how much he misses doing that and how much, you know, the kids still remember those good times.
So. Well, those are some of the things that made that part of our life the best of times. Loving our kids and doing things together with them as a family. And we just have so many pictures, and back when you had pictures printed out, but just pictures and memories, just a few of, like we told you. But you might be thinking, well, then what was the worst part? Well, the worst part was, well, we had given 100% to our kids. I mean, And maybe we weren't doing it right, exactly right. And let me just put a plug in here. You guys are so, what's the word I'm looking for?
Blessed.
Blessed to have this church where they teach you how to live for the Lord practically. I mean, the church that I had gone to, that I had been raised in, same doctrine, same standards, same good music, good teaching, but when I started coming here, I realized what was missing, that I wasn't getting the practical things, like how to actually apply the things that we needed to do as, you know, as a married couple. But that was just a little something extra there. But take advantage of, for instance, this class and kids, classes for kids. It really is, it's just wonderful. But anyway, we had given 100% to doing the best that we could for our kids. But unfortunately, we didn't put nearly as much time into our marriage. And we were drifting apart back then emotionally. We just didn't take the time to nurture our own relationship. And we were both at fault. No, but we were both at fault. But as we said the other week, we had made a promise to God to stay together till death do us part, and we're still here. Yeah, we just simply didn't take the time with God that we should have back then, and thank you.
Well, to quote Charles Dickens again, it was the best of times and it was the worst of times. Well, I'll take blame. I was the worst of times. Right? What happened was I just simply, because I drifted from God and I wasn't going to church, I take the blame for a lot of it, you know, a lot of the stuff that happened. 2 Corinthians 6:14 says, "Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers." Now, I was a believer. Don't get me wrong. But in a sense, that quote, or that verse, I should say, not quote, that verse applied to me, in a sense, because I wasn't living as a believer at the time. I was living a carnal life. You know, it was just as simple as that. And God tells us not to be unequally yoked. And like I said, we were in a sense. And I'll be the first to attest that that is a profound verse in the Bible for both non-believers and believers. And I don't know if I'm quoting this right. The pastor, maybe he can correct me here. But that's how I'm applying this verse to my life at that time.
So, to sum it all up, what do we want you to learn from our experience? First, be not unequally yoked. If you aren't saved, you need to be saved and living for the Lord. That's the most important thing. The next thing I'd like you to know, or that we would like you to know, is to put God first. Give 100% to your marriage. Also, give 100% to raising your kids. Now, I'm, as Joe can tell you, I'm not good at math, but that adds up to 200%, I believe. But it's worth it. Giving 100% to your marriage, giving 100% to raising your children for God, and God will help you. It takes a lot of work, but God will help you.
Thank you. Turn to Malachi chapter 2. Go ahead. More babies can be seen up here. There's interviews with Lynette, and there's interviews with Sarah this morning. Don't forget, fellowship is coming up on Friday, the 28th of April. And so I hope you're setting that time aside. You're all welcome to our home on the 28th. That evening, we'll have a cookout. My wife will probably ask you to maybe bring a cider or a dessert or something. And we'll get flyers out to you and get you more information on that. So that's that's 26 days from today. So 4 weeks from this past Friday. So we'll remind you on that. We do have public confession this morning. Brother Dirk has a confession to make from yesterday. He sent me a text before outreach yesterday. He says, I'm not going to be there. We've had a rough night. And so the text is followed by a picture of a baby. They had their baby. And so I'm sitting in my chair and I'm telling my wife, and she comes over, she says, let me see the picture, and we're doing all this. And I'm thinking, whenever somebody has a baby that's a member here, we have three phone calls we make. We make one to Virginia Albright regarding meals. We make one to Darlene Kyle because she gets a gift card for families that have a baby, and we make Dave Wilbur puts together a scrapbook of everything that happened in the news that day and things like that. So immediately, I'm rejoicing, but I'm thinking, oh, I got three phone calls to make today, and thankfully I didn't make those three phone calls because about three minutes later, I don't know, he writes back and says, oh, by the way, it's April Fool's or something along those lines. So, I had trust in him, but I don't any longer have trust in him. Well, I'm dealing with parenting the next 3 weeks, okay? In Malachi chapter 2, you're there. Parenting is something where you always need to learn something more. Like no parent ever gets to, I got this all figured out. Just about the time you got toddlers figured out, your kid's moving into preschool. Just about the time you got that figured out, they're moving. Parenting moves. It moves into different stages. And so Paul Harvey told of a 5-year-old who was in the backyard brushing her dog's teeth. When her father asked her what she was doing, she replied, "Don't worry, Daddy, I'll put your toothbrush back like I always have." Oh boy. Parenthood is the scariest hood you will ever venture through. We have learned a lot of things about parenting over the last 20 years. My kids were just home this week and got to enjoy some time with them. Brandon graduates in 6 weeks from Bible college, and of course now they're crossing the bridge of marriage and ministry and all of those things. And so we're at a different stage, and yet we still feel like there's things to learn, like how do you, as an adult, function as a parent. It's a lot different with adult children than it is children under your house. And so you learn to keep your mouth shut a lot, and you learn to pray a lot. That's what I've figured out so far. I want to deal with the goal of parenting today in the time that we have left. And I'm just going to put my phone here so I can track it to me. In Malachi chapter number 2, it's an interesting passage, and it identifies the goal of godliness as parents. And biblical purposes are important in whatever we're doing. If we get the biblical purpose right, we can build everything around that. If we don't get the biblical purpose right of what we're doing, then obviously we're going to be sprawled out a little bit in what we're trying to accomplish. In Malachi chapter 2, the prophet's writing to the nation of Judah, and Judah was dealing with their wives treacherously, or they were divorcing. That's the context of what we're dealing with. But I want you to look at verse number 14. It says, "Yet ye say, wherefore, because the Lord hath been witness between thee and the wife of thy youth, against whom thou hast dealt treacherously. Yet is she thy companion and the wife of thy covenant, or even though you divorced her, she's still thy companion and the wife of thy covenant." In God's eyes, hey, you married for life. You made a vow for life. "And did not he make one," verse 15, one speaking of the husband-wife relationship, Yet had he the residue of the Spirit, and wherefore one, or why did he make one? I think the next phrase is very interesting. That he might seek a godly seed. The reason God brings a man and a woman together in the context of marriage, believers, is that they might seek a godly seed. Notice it doesn't say a good seed. Notice it doesn't say a religious seed. It does say a godly seed. Therefore, take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth, or a big chink in the armor in a family towards raising children is if we don't have a spirit right towards one another. We let our spirits depart from one another. That's going to affect our children. And he says that there. So if you think that you can be apart spiritually and still raise godly seed, grace of God can do anything, right? But God's word seems to indicate here, boy, your relationship to each other being right before the Lord, and some of those things we talked about last week in love and reverence, those things being right contributes in a big way to raising godly seed. And let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth. And so the Bible here clearly points to raising children with the purpose in mind of godliness. The purpose in mind is not, I want to raise my child to be a lawyer or to be a professional baseball player or to be, we have an occupation in mind. The purpose of raising children is to raise a godly seed. That needs to be the mark in your home. Every home here needs to have that as the mark. The end goal is that we raise godly children. Paul said of the children, spiritually speaking, in the book of Galatians, which we're preaching through on Wednesday night, my little children of whom I travail in birth again until Christ be formed in you. There's godliness. Until Christ be formed in you. He says, I travail in birth. With that, you have any idea what we're talking about there? Yeah. Some of you that have had children, you know exactly what we're talking about. Beth Lee, getting very, very close and facing those travailing times. Paul says, that's what I went through, church, with you, spiritual children, till Christ be formed in you. In Ephesians chapter 4, verse 13, dealing with the context of spiritual leaders, one of the burdens of spiritual leaders is till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man under the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. So what is godliness? It's Christ-likeness. That our children develop into little Christs. And I don't mean that irreverently. I just mean that they live out the life of Christ through their lives. We know that He predestinated us to be conformed to the image of His Son. And so, in order for my kids to see Christ, they need to see me being shaped into the image of Christ. If none of that shaping is going on, then they'll never know what that shaping looks like in their lives. And so, let me give you some false thinking regarding purposes this morning. We'll just deal with this goal of godliness. In the next 2 weeks, I'll be dealing with some other things in parenting. Some parents think that their purpose in raising children is for their children to like them. I want my children to like me. All of us have a desire for our children to like us. But that is not the goal of parenting. Okay? There are going to be times, wake up call, earth to all of us, there are going to be times where they don't like us. When Andrea makes Alan or Eric go another hour of school when they want to be outside playing in the woods, their immediate reaction is, mom's not nice today. Okay? Does that mean that she's doing what's wrong because she's not liked? No. No. The things that you're going to do that are right many times are not going to be liked. Okay? That's part of training. That's part of discipline. That's part of parenting. Others think that their purpose is to be nice to them. I love my kids. I try to be nice. But when I got out of Rod, it didn't feel nice. Like, this was not a nice time for them or me. And so others think that their purpose ends at providing a roof over their head, clothing for their backs, and food on the table. Gentlemen, can I speak to your hearts? There have been many dads who thought that, that parenting ended with those three things. And I would say parenting hasn't begun. You're just taking care of the needs of your family. There's much more to get them besides providing a roof, clothing, and food. Some parents think that their purpose is to give their kids the American dream. And I would argue this. Prosperity has killed godliness. Like, provide for them. But they don't need the American dream. They don't need everything. They don't need to be given everything on a silver platter. We have kids today in America that they've been given too much. And so they're sapping from society. They're not contributing to society in any way. They're not selfless in their relationships within their family. They're selfish. They're taking because they've been given everything that you can think of. That's not the end goal. The American dream is not the end goal. Still others think that parenting is leaving decisions up to their six-year-old. Now, Johnny, what would you like for supper? Now, Johnny, what would you like? Now, Johnny, what would you like? If you factor that all the way out, all the way up through their teen years, they'll never know how to live life when it doesn't go their way. They'll be used to everything going their way. And so these are not purposes that fit in with godliness. Some have the thought that my purpose is to keep my children from getting in trouble. If I can just keep them from getting in trouble, I've done a good job. No, that doesn't mean they're godly. Well, if I can keep my daughters from getting pregnant outside the bounds of marriage, then I've done a good job. No, that doesn't produce godliness, that alone. To keep them from being involved in drugs and drinking, if I can just keep them out of the drug culture and out of the drinking culture, we want them out of these things, right? We want to protect them from these things. If I can keep them from having a police record or going to jail, I will have succeeded as a parent. Well, I don't want my kids to have a police record or go to jail. But I want you to understand that there's a lot of Christian parents who get this morning. Here's the crux of the teaching. There's a lot of Christian parents that have the goal of good kids, but not godly kids. And I'll tell you how it happens. It happens in good churches like ours where we protect them from everything. By the way, I'm for protecting them. Okay? There are certain things, because my goal is godliness, that are automatic off-limits to my kids. Just is going to be that way. But watch this. There's not on the backside of that protection a development of relationship with the Lord, the development of that heart to where they go on the offensive for God. One of the reasons why I talk to you about outreach. It's critical. Because we can be so protective. We can protect them from everything. But if we don't develop in them a heartbeat for God, we don't show them how to have a personal time with God. We don't demonstrate that in our lives. We don't take time with them spiritually in our homes. We don't pray with them. We don't develop in them an offensive mindset that I'm going to serve God for the rest of my life. I want to give my life to God. Well, I want God to use me. Then good kids, would you get this morning? Good kids become carnal kids without relationship with God. Over time, you'll keep them protected in your home. But long term, they won't serve God. Alright? We have to get beyond the goal of goodness. It can't just be, well, I just want a good kid that doesn't give me problems. No. Wherefore is there one? There's one, there's husband and wife together. Why? That they might seek a godly seed. God's interested in godly children. The clear goal of every Christian parent is not just to have a good child, but to have a godly child. Can I say this? Time at the buck doesn't produce that. I'm not against time at the buck. Okay? I'm not against you having time with your children. What they said this morning, we have memories built up of vacations and all kinds of things with our kids. But being involved in the community doesn't produce this. Being a hard worker does not produce godliness. I'm glad for hard workers. I had little Andrew over at my house yesterday, and we were watching the kids there for a couple hours, and we went outside, and I needed to pick up all these pine cones. And I reasoned, he's shorter than I am. This kid doesn't hardly have to bend over. He did. So I'm like, Andrew, I got a deal. We were riding the tractor together. I said, Andrew, I got a deal for you. I said, how about you help me pick up pine cones? And every pine cone that you pick up, I'll give you a penny for. That's a deal. He goes in, grabs the bucket, and he starts picking up pine cones. I said, you know, $100's a dollar. He goes, I'm going to get 100. He gets to 100, counting them all out. He takes his bucket, he puts a big trash can, you know, and so he's over 100. He's like, what do I do if I get over 100? Well, then you get more money. So he ends up picking up, I think he picked up 325 pine cones or something. I'm glad you got the energy, brother. You're saving my bag. But I complimented him. He's a hard worker. You know, work's important. But work doesn't produce godliness. I want my kids to have that quality, but it doesn't produce godliness. Notice the clear emphasis in Scripture is not on the negative, but on the positive. And we are to train them up in this direction. The purpose helps me to know what to nurture in their life. It helps me to know what to direct them towards. It helps me to prioritize. Listen, I was a youth pastor here for 10 years. Most of the kids coming into my youth group, and we had 45, 50 kids. Okay? We would have devotions check up every week. There were some kids that had devotions 5, 6, 7 days. And in my mind, I thought 5 years from now, there's a good chance that these kids are going to stay on target. There were many kids that came from good homes that had devotions maybe 1 day a week, maybe 2 days a week. And my wife knows. I said, hon, they're going to blow to pieces. They have no relationship with God. They may be protected. They may have a home that's sheltering them, which we should, but that's not the end of godliness, all right? That doesn't alone produce godliness. There's purpose helps to narrow life. If your purpose is godliness, it narrows your life. It narrows their lives. That's the idea of training. Because of what we designed, what we desired, our lives were narrowed. Our lives weren't as broad as other people's. Our kids did not get involved in everything that came along. I remember an opportunity for my son, probably about 13 years old. There was an opportunity for him to get involved in emergency training. And boy, there was a man that was interested in that with him, and he could have climbed the ladder and gone and do a lot of different things. And I remember counseling with my dad about that, saying, Dad, what do you think? I said, you know, he's 13. I want him to have goals. He said, son, he said, I'd be careful how much appetite I create in other things. You want your kids to be balanced, but you want to leave the door open for God to get a hold of their hearts without a big appetite being already in a direction. And so I remember saying no to that. He was interested in carpentry. And so he's getting of that age that he's thinking about a decision in life of a career. And so we felt like, well, let's see if the Lord wants this. And we sent him to tech for an hour and a half every day his senior year. And I think the crowd there kind of God used that to steer him away, that maybe that wasn't for what God wanted. But one thing that we learned in parenting is be careful how much you feed an appetite, that something doesn't become an idol in their life. Ball became an idol for my son, and he'll tell you that. There was a time in his teen years that I took it away for a number of months, and he wasn't too happy. I wasn't the nice guy at that time. But he'll tell you that, Dad, that was probably a very crucial point in my life. Because it revealed to me how much something had a hold of me. He came back 3 times to me and said, Dad, can I play ball yet? I said, no, not yet. I said, I'll know when it's right. And he said, Dad, had you never ever put your finger on that? He said, I would have never realized how it became an idol in my life. We want our kids to serve God. And so we have to be very, very careful what appetites. We want to build on their strengths. We want to address their weaknesses, but we want to be careful how much we feed somebody in a direction. My dad always said, teach your kids to be well-rounded. I think a big part of godliness is developing reading in them. If they're not readers, why would they sit down and read the Bible? And some of our kids are more outdoorsy than others. I understand that. You know, my boy's very outdoorsy. But if they're going to develop in godliness, they have to know how to read the Bible and to study it. And that may not be the most exciting thing for them at this stage of life, but you need to work at it with them. Because I'll tell you this, if they're not readers by high school, into their single years, what are they going to take in? Are they going to take everything through video? Are they going to take all the entertainment and the movies in? Are they going to take in a book like what Jerry Ross wrote, The Teenage Years of Christ? But what you're putting in them, okay, what's going in them is what's going to come out of them. All right? So as parents, you need to be very careful and evaluate what you're putting in them. I'm not saying at the same time that they need to be in the Bible 24 hours a day. I am saying this, there better be something going on in your home that has spiritual gears in it and not just the church. Don't lean on the church to produce godly children. He gave them parents that they might seek a godly seed. The church is here to come along and help, but the church can never make up for where the home is deficient. And so I want to remind you that purpose helps to narrow. Purpose helps to establish priorities. If godliness is my purpose, then church is not missed. Just not ever going to make that substitute where we go and do something else in place of church. Because I know that decision is going to have deeper payoffs down the road that are going to kill my heart. And so it establishes priorities. Spiritual training and the study of Scripture becomes a priority. Giving my kids good spiritual books is a priority. Television is not a priority. Video games are not a priority. My child living on his cell phone will not contribute to the purpose of godliness. And so I have to manage those things. I have to live with understanding that there's a battle going on in my home. Purpose helps to identify needed habits. All right. If the purpose is godliness, then there's some habits I want them to develop. Commitment to family devotions. Your children need active involvement in disciplines of the Christian life. You can't become godly without discipline. You just can't. You can't become godly and hit devotions once every 2 weeks. Not going to develop godliness that way. There has to be some commitments that you talk about, priorities. You talk about habits, what to train your children in. Godliness says, man, I want my kids saved at the earliest possible age. I'm going to make them wise into salvation, get them in places that make them wise into salvation, teach them the gospel songs, sing them to them when I'm rocking them to bed at night when they're a baby. By all means, I'm going to infiltrate their minds with godly truth and godly music. I would say that purpose also means it helps me to avoid choices that would hinder my purpose, my God-given purpose. And so, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter who else I please. Well, my grandparents, our parents don't agree with this. I could care less. I got one purpose here. I got to raise them towards godliness. And so there's going to be choices that we make. I think one of the grandma, I think Jenny's grandma got the girls a Barbie doll. Barbie. And we didn't want them getting into Barbie. There were cartoons at the time and, you know, all kinds of things. And so we kindly talked to them and said, listen, we love Grandma and Grandma loves you and we're not against Grandma. We just don't want you to be in the Barbie industry. And so we're going to go out and get you another doll that you can enjoy. We do want our girls to have that mother instinct, mothering instinct, but we didn't want them to go that direction. He said, "Preacher, yep. And you know what? I don't regret any of it today. The times that I wasn't liked, it's okay. This morning when you leave here, would you just take with you our purpose as parents is godliness. Are we running our home? Are we taking our kids in that direction? Or are there things in our home that is a hindrance to accomplishing that purpose?" I believe that if you put that before the Lord as you're praying for your children every day, I believe the Spirit of God will reveal to you, like He did with us many times. We weren't perfect parents. We didn't get it all right. There are things I should have said no to that I didn't. Things I should have said yes to, spent more time on than I did. But keep your eye on the goal. All right? The goal is not the goal.